Golden Crown Radio. I'm Joey.
And I'm Nathan.
And this is episode number four.
Numero cuatro.
And so this week we're just going to jump right in because we've got a lot to talk about. Last week we announced that Christy gave us the minimalist challenge for I Never or Never Have I Ever. Whatever the segment is called, the idea is that somebody tells us something to do and then we do it. And so the idea was for every day of the week we'll get rid of one item in our house the first week. Or the first day, two items the second day, three items the third day, etc. So we were supposed to get rid of about 30 items, 28 items, I think. And I ended up getting rid of more than 200 items.
Yeah, my guesstimate is that I'm somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 to 250 items. All in one day. I didn't exactly follow the spirit of the challenge.
Well, I'd say you follow the spirit, but not the law.
Not the law, yeah.
Because we're all about the spirit on this podcast. And I also just mostly got rid of everything at once, because once I started, I couldn't stop. It was kind of fun, almost.
I don't know that mine was fun as much as if I was going to do it, it was going to have to be like a Band-Aid, ripping
just
it all
one,
off. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I would have had time to think about it, I think I would have stalled out a little bit faster than I had anticipated. So.
Yeah. So we said with the challenges, what do we get rid of? You saw some of the pictures on Facebook, probably, if you follow our Facebook feed, which you should, because yeah, it's
absolutely you should.
Full of great information and also pictures of us.
And you can like things.
You can, yeah.
Who doesn't like liking things?
You can poke the company as a whole, I think.
I'm not really sure what poking was ever intended for, but you can do it, I think.
If you want to. And so you've noticed that I, being Joey, got rid of... put up a picture of about 100 books. Overall, I got rid of over 150 books, which were most of the books that I actually own, which was a pretty big deal for me, but we'll go into that later. And I also got rid of probably 75 or 80 comics, which I was keeping for a collection, but I never actually read or enjoyed.
Yeah, and I ended up getting rid of a vast majority of my video game stuff, my video game collection. Stuff that I'd been collecting over the course of like 25 years of my life, at least.
Yeah, big time.
I think I got rid of, it was either six or seven video game consoles dating all the way back to the NES that my parents gave me when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And going all the way up to the Xbox 360 that I bought, you know, not that many years ago, it seems like, along with pretty much all of the games. Not everything, and I think we'll get to that here in a little bit as well. There were a couple of things that I couldn't get rid of. But yeah, that, I got rid of an entire long box full of comics, and
how many comics is that, roughly?
Roughly, in my box at least, because I had some trades that were in there as well, I would say that I had somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 to 100 plus, you know, 5 or 6 trades.
Yeah.
That were included as well, and it was kind of similar to Joey. It was stuff that I wasn't using. I'd got, when I originally started collecting comics and thought that it would be something that I'd care about, and looking back on it, I was like, I'm never going to reread this again. I'm never going to look at this again. And then I also got rid of a massive stack of clothes that were either way too big because they were from like high school and I still couldn't get rid of them, and being like bigger clothes were cool in high school. Like,
yeah,
you wanted it to
okay.
be bag.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like parachute pants.
Yeah, not parachute pants. I mean, that was like, well, maybe parachute pants. we'll get into that later. But yeah, just getting rid of a bunch of button-up shirts and things like that that were way too big on me or way too small because my brother had given them to me. So yeah, it was just stuff that needed to go. It was never going to get worn. It was never going to get used.
So we also heard throughout the week that other people got rid of things either to make room for grandkids or just to participate. I know my wife, Sam, got rid of a lot of clothes herself, like you did, and she actually got rid of 4 bags, which we donated to a local serving center, which is cool because now other people can use them, and like you said, they're things that we weren't using, but they're things that were in good shape, so certainly other people can get use out of them, so what's the point of,
yeah, absolutely.
Of us keeping? I mentioned earlier that getting rid of the books, most of the books I had, was kind of hard for me, and it was an interesting, I guess you could call it an experiment, because the reason I had kept a lot of books is to be real. In my mind, I had always pictured myself as this person that thought it would be cool to have like a whole wall full of books. And in our house, we had a wall-to-wall bookshelf. And so it was more or less filled up. I guess I just thought of myself as this person that loved books and getting lost in the imagination and thinking and stuff. But the reality was, if I were to do a 1 to 5 star rating on books, most of them were probably 3 star, where I kind of liked them, but I would never read them. And so I started just trying to pick out enough books to meet the goal for this project. But then as I started taking them out, I started taking more and more out because I realized, well, I don't even really like this book anymore. Or maybe it was a book from college I always thought I was going to read. But if it's been 10 years and I've never even looked at it, probably I'm not going to reference it. And so,
right.
So I just kept making pass after pass. And eventually most of the books were off the shelf, and we made a very long and arduous trail and a trip to Half Price Books and made some money off of it. And overall, I think I made, even though I sold a lot of books, I probably made about 100 books because a lot of them were probably not worth that much. And apparently they weren't worth as much to myself as I thought they were either. So that's what it was like for me. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I mean, thinking about like boxing everything up, it was a lot different for me because most of my stuff actually already was boxed up. Which is part of the reason that I knew that I needed to get rid of it in the first place. Mm. It had been sitting in a closet in a room that I go into like every so often to throw more junk in, because nothing is in there except junk, just sitting on the floors and on a bookcase or all this stuff. There is some stuff that I value that's good in there. You know, I have a guitar, I have some other stuff, but it just kind of like stays hidden in there because I'm like, I don't really know what to do with this. I've got so much stuff everywhere. I don't even know where to put the stuff that I like because there's just junk all over the house. So I had this whole closet with big storage totes that I knew were full of video game stuff that like I always said that I treasured, that I always had a really hard time even coming up with a reason on like why I should get rid of. But I knew that I wasn't using it, especially since I moved into my new house 2.5 years ago. It had been sitting in the closet the entire time. I'd at least had it out somewhere at my old house where, like, you could look at it. Or I could walk by it and I could see it. And I could say, you know, oh.
It was like a video game museum almost in your old house.
It was. I even had, like, some art that I had done that was in a retro style. You know, some, you know, 8-bit or 16-bit kind of little art things that I'd done. And, you know, I had a big plans for it all at that time. And then kind of when I moved, for one, I didn't really have a room that I could use the same way. And for two, it just kind of didn't feel like something that I needed to retain in my life. You know, the reason I was keeping it was a whole lot different than the reason I thought that I was keeping it. But yeah, so it was already in boxes. I didn't have to go through and look at it. I knew exactly what was in there. I knew exactly how well it was kept, which was funny when I went to Game Over Video Games to sell it. The guy was like, I really appreciate like what you've done. You've kept all your stuff in such good shape and like everything's where it should be. You've kind of, you know, rubber banded all of the cables together, and you know, all of my games were in the cases that they were supposed to be in, and they were
so
in pristine.
It was ready to go. Really.
It was ready to go. But it was hard once I started moving it out into the car. It was stuff, again, like Joey said, it was stuff that I didn't even necessarily care about all that much. It wasn't stuff that like I intended to go back to. I hadn't used several of the things in, you know, a decade. Or I'd used it in a decade just to see if it still worked. And I was satisfied with like, oh, curiosity has peaked. You know, I've done everything that I needed to do. I can stick this back in its box and, you know, who really needs to play Duck Hunt again? you know, you can every so often, but, you know, it's not as enticing after, you know, years of now a PS4 or something else. So boxing it up wasn't very hard. It was putting it in the car itself. And again, like I said earlier, it was kind of one of those things where I knew if I would have had to part it out, I could have gotten more money for it. I'm sure I could have gotten, you know, quite a bit more money for it than what I did. But if I hadn't done it all in one go, I don't think I would have done it at all.
Yeah.
I would have found every reason in the world to keep an NES that I never used, to keep a copy of Guerrilla War that I bought in a Lufkin mall from an old lady that ran a retro game store. And like, I remember the story like of these games that when I bought them, but there was no real reason to keep any of it. And so it was interesting to see how deeply tied into like my identity, even like the stuff that I had that I hadn't thought about in years, but knew exactly what it was, turned out to be.
Well, so when you talk about being tied into your identity, does that mean, what does that mean exactly? Cause I know for me, I kind of touched on briefly, but I kind of saw myself as this person that loved books, and I had all these books, and you mentioned remembering stories. I know for me, I have pretty much every book I can remember where I got it or who gave it to me or things like that. So can you talk more about how your identity was tied up in those specific things, those games?
I mean, part of it, I guess, like something with like the NES, it was something that my parents had given me. It was the very first game console I ever got. It kind of got me started in a life of enjoying video games in the first place when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And I remember distinctly like getting it. And again, I haven't thought about it or used it or done anything with it in a while. And this is actually something that, you know, as we started boxing stuff up, as I started getting ready to get rid of it, we had just recently gone through a sermon series on basically like money and things and like not letting things own you. And kind of the idea behind, you know, knowing that things can own us, that mm-hmm. there's a possibility for the things that we own to, you know, have more. I don't know what the word that I'm looking for is there, but they have more of a grip on us than we want to claim. Yeah. I remember listening to that sermon series and thinking, you know, like there's really nothing that like I would hold, you know, more valuable to me than, you know, I've got a pretty good handle on my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as I grabbed that stuff and I started putting it together and like getting ready to sell it, and even as I was watching the guy count through all of my games, I was like, man, I'm really attached to this stuff. Like,
yeah.
A large part of my identity for the longest time was the fact that I was the guy that had all of my game systems uh-huh. going back to the NES. I even actually have an Atari 2600 that's technically my dad, so that didn't get sold. It probably would have been actually worth some decent money since it's still in functional condition, but I was the guy that didn't have to get rid of his childhood. Most of my friends are married. They had to kind of get rid of stuff because their wives or whatever said, you know, like, hey, you got to get rid of this junk. Like, yeah. you're a grown man now. You've got kids. Get rid of your stuff. I never had anybody tell me that. So I kind of took pride in that in a lot of ways. It was just like, you know, I didn't have to give up my childhood like some of these other people have. I may not be using it, but at least I get to keep it.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that's kind of a weird thing now that I look back on it. I'm like, that really wasn't, you know, that healthy of a mind frame or a mindset. So getting rid of it that way, understanding that like I had an unhealthy amount of my identity built into the stuff that I didn't even use, was kind of screwed up in a way.
Yeah. You know who else preach that sermon?
Who is that?
Tyler Durden in Fight Club.
He did indeed.
At the diner table, he says, the things you own end up owning you.
Yeah.
In a very cool Brad Pitt way.
Yeah, and then he blew up all those buildings at the end.
He did, which we're not advocating
on
this
podcast. We're not
advocating
that at all.
No, please don't do that.
Please don't.
Definitely, and if you do, don't blame us.
Yeah, blame Tyler Durden. That'd be okay. I'm sure Chuck Palahniuk or whatever can take some blame, but not us.
He could take the hit. And another thing that you kind of hit on, well, I don't want to speak for you, but on mine, I almost noticed a false sentimentality or sense of worth of some of the objects, because either I had bought them from a certain bookstore, or they were from a certain time in my life, and it was almost like I thought if I got rid of that book, I wouldn't have access to the memories or lessons learned in that time of my life. So that's why I had a lot of college books, or maybe I know there were some books I got in a used bookstore in New York. And I just kept them just because they were from a used bookstore in New York.
Right.
But the book was okay, but I mean, I read it, but I couldn't tell you the plot of it. It didn't stick with me. It wasn't something
right.
I had to tell other people about. So I guess what I decided for myself is I still have the memory of, you know, thumbing through all these shelves and shelves of musty books in this really cool New York used bookstore, but I don't have to have that book to have that memory. I still have that.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of part of mine as well. You know, I remember growing up and playing these games with my cousin or, you know, with friends that came in from, you know, out of the neighborhood or whatever, and we would sit down and we would gather around, you know, this terrible old TV that, you know, most of you kids aren't even going to remember this, but it had a remote that literally had every numbered station that you could go to. So, like, it had a number for 52. There, you didn't hit 5 and then 2, you hit 52 and that would take you. And so, like, a lot of my games were played on that TV in the study at my parents' house.
I played some games at that house.
He did indeed.
When I was a kid.
We had a big night when the Dreamcast originally came out and got to get all together, and we rented a bunch of games at Blockbuster, which no longer exists as well.
Yeah.
And we got to play a lot of stuff, which was really, really
fun.
We
called it the Noche de Video Games,
we
if
did
I'm
indeed.
Remembering correctly.
We did indeed.
It was
indeed.
A big night.
It was. We took like a time off in the middle of like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, and we went and walked around the neighborhood, and that was weird. I think there was a guy smoking a cigarette outside.
Yeah, scared
and
the crap out of
it
us.
It did. And we were like, you know what? Maybe video games are a safer habit than walking. The neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning. But I remember, you know, attaching all these memories to all these different things. And again, like Joey, I was like, if I get rid of them, I'm going to lose that. But I got rid of them. And here we are recounting the memory that, you know, I mm-hmm. had. And so it's still right there. The sentimentality is still there. The memory is still there. The object that I thought required it, you know, is no longer. So hopefully somebody else will get to enjoy it. Maybe some other kid will get to buy my Dreamcast and have a Noche de Video Games of his own.
Yeah. And so 10 years from now, when they're beaming podcasts straight into our heads, those two kids will be doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we talked about how we got rid of stuff. How did you decide what to keep? Because I know I definitely kept books. The books I kept, I talked about, you know, my 5-star rating for a book. So 3 is I liked it, which is most books I'm cool with. 4 is I really liked it, which is a book I would feel comfortable recommending to somebody. And 5 is I loved it. So it's like a book, that's a very high upper echelon where they're books that I keep or would give people as gifts, or I have a little engraving stamp that Sam got me with my name on it. It says from the library of Joseph Halbert.
Right, yeah.
I would stamp that book. And so if it was a 4 or 5, I kept it. Or if it was a gift from somebody, like a graduation from high school gift, or my old roommate gave me a couple books that he wrote inscriptions on, and they're good books anyway. They're 4 or 5 books anyway. But I definitely kept those because I didn't see any benefit in getting rid of those particular items. So it was almost, I guess if it was, had sentimental value and it was something I really liked.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I determined, because there were definitely games that I kept. There weren't consoles that I kept, but there were games that I kept that I couldn't bear to get rid of, just because I remember them being like the highlights of my like video gaming career. These mm-hmm. were the games that I played that I were like, I could play this again today, and it would still be just as good as when I played it when I was a kid. Yeah. What's kind of funny is like I kept multiple games for systems that I no longer own anymore, so I can't actually play them again, but I couldn't bear to get rid of it just because of the fact that I was like, man, someday maybe they'll have a way that I can like attach this to some sort of device. I think they actually have these now that would combine all of my old systems into one thing.
Yeah, they do have those.
Make it minimalist in the sense that now I don't have 8 things in a box in a room, right. But I could have one little deal and plug it in, and you know, I could go back and play it. And I think one of the reasons that held so strong for me as well was talking to a friend of mine that has kept a lot of his gaming stuff, and he's got a little boy. He actually has a little girl as well, but he has a little boy who's now 4 or 5 years old, and he's like, you know, I'm glad that I kept some of my big, like, video gaming experience stuff, because I'm getting to walk my little boy through the same mm-hmm. stuff that I did. And so, like, part of it was, these are the best things that I remember of gaming experience-wise, whether the, you know, personal experience-wise was good or not. And I'm like, I want to be able to walk, you know, hopefully someday have kids, and be able to walk them through that as well. So I think that's the stuff that I was like, this is something that I would want to pass on that somebody else could enjoy.
Yeah. You know what's to double back a little bit about identity, a positive thing of I don't know if culling is the right word, but going through things and weaning out the things you don't like. Weeding out, not weaning out. It doesn't have anything to do with milk. but a positive thing of getting rid of them, our friend Kayla and I were talking about this the other day, is that when you just keep the things that you really like, it's almost like an autobiography. So you can look at the books I have now and you have a pretty good idea of who I am now.
Right.
Or you can look at my comic collection, which is getting cut way back, and you can see what kind of stories I appreciate or what I value. Like your friend was saying, with what he's passing on the things that he values the most. And it's almost like these collections that we curate are telling these stories, even subconsciously, about who we are. And I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't really even thought about it as much on that. But there was definitely a lot of stuff that I'm like, I don't care if anybody ever sees this again. I don't know that I cared that anybody saw it in the first place. Mm-hmm. But then there were things that I'm like, you know, this matters, and I kind of want this to be something that I can pass on one way or another. So yeah, it's interesting that, yeah, looking back, you will see that I really, really enjoyed role-playing games.
Yeah.
I still do, obviously, to this day. We've talked about it multiple times. It's a slightly different version of it. But you can see where that love started way, way, way back in my childhood. And so it makes a lot of sense why I am the way that I am today.
Yeah, you can trace it all back, which is pretty cool.
It is actually pretty neat.
And so, for example, my books, there's some big, great works of political science or political thinking that I wanted to keep, just because in my day job, I work in the political realm, and those ideas, to me, aren't just about politics, which I understand why it has a negative connotation, but it's about how we decide what's important in our culture.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, we're doing this podcast. Obviously, that's something that's interesting to me. There are some books by C.S. Lewis or Bonhoeffer that are formative to me that I want to keep because they remind me of what's important in my life and the thoughts that shape me. And then there are some, like I mentioned, some gift books just from people. My old college roommate made a book of, I mean, he's a poet, and so he just basically scribbled out a book of his own poems and gave that to me. So
nice.
I mean, you just kind of have all these pieces of things, and I guess they almost make a mosaic of who you are. So there's a benefit of getting rid of things is that the things you do have actually matter, I guess you could say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Did you, I made a little more than $100 just getting rid of books, if you feel like talking about it. Did you make any money, or were you able to transfer money from things you didn't use into things that are useful for you, maybe?
Kind of a combination. So off my books and comics and stuff like that I sold at half price, I made like 70 books, of which like 45 I almost immediately transferred into books on woodworking that were some big, you know, the big highly recommended stuff that people have been talking about on the little woodworking forums. And so woodworking is something that I care a lot about now. And so getting to turn that into something that I can actually use to make stuff that I value in the future was pretty cool. I hadn't even thought of it, but it took them so long to count through my books and give them a value that I'm like, well, I gotta have something to do. And I kind of walked around and I happened to stumble into, you know, the woodworking section, or, you know, just the hobbyist section, found these different things and was flipping through them. And like the quality of the book was actually really, really nice. And they're big, huge textbook type things. And
okay. So I was
like, this is something that something that I can actually use. And so I turned it into something useful. And then all of the video gaming stuff, and this may sound like a lot, but it also, remember, again, this is 2.5 decades worth of a collection. I managed to get $300 for, which is kind of heartbreaking in its way.
Yeah, because you had so much tied into it emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, you'd think that 25 years was worth more than $300, but it was not. But, you know, I've set some of that money aside to be able to do some of the other woodworking projects and things like that I want to do at my house. You know, I just recently had a fire pit built, and so I'm trying to turn my backyard into a place where I can actually get some people not only in my house, but outside my house and really enjoy nature and creation and all that kind of stuff. So,
you've converted things you don't use into experiences for more people.
Yeah. So I'd rather be able to spend time with folks. And before I was able to do that with games, and now I'm able to do that, you know, outside and cooking and grilling. And we've done some marshmallows and we've poured gasoline on the fire because I couldn't make it burn. And so, you know, that's an experience.
How did that go?
Nobody lost hair. Actually, I lost a little bit on my arm, but I didn't realize that until after the fact.
Oh.
So.
Wow. High adventure.
High adventure here.
Wow. Of the things you got rid of, given what we've said about what to keep, did you have any regrets about the process or what you did get rid of? Did you make any mistakes?
I don't think that I made any mistakes. I think that it was good that I got rid of what I got rid of. But one of the things that I talked about, and one of the things I kind of teased on the picture that I posted, was that I had a panic attack right after I got rid of all of my stuff. Actually, that night, I was driving somewhere. I don't even remember where. I was in my car by myself. It was dark. I had the radio off. And I was just kind of thinking through, and all of a sudden, I was just like, what did I do? Like, what did I do?
No.
I blamed Christy unfairly for a moment for forcing me to get rid of this, which she did not. It was hard. It was actually, that was the point when I actually had to sit down and like realize where my identity was and all this stuff. So do I regret doing it? No, because it actually taught me a valuable lesson. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, I had that panic attack that night. And then there was a couple of nights later, I started thinking about something and I had like this weird urge to play a game that didn't even, like, I didn't even remember that I had until I went to sell it. And I was just like, I don't even want to do that. But like, I want to now because I don't have it. Yeah. And so it was this kind of weird attack again, but, now I look at, you know, my empty shelves on my, in my media room up here and, I'm like, man, there's actually some other stuff I could get rid of as well. And, I don't miss the stuff I got rid of anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely like one of those did not expect it panic attacks driving down the road. And it's like, oh, what am I going to do?
Why, Christy?
Yeah. So thank you, Christy, for pushing me at least to do something that I should have done in the first place anyway. And now learning to live with the fact that, you know, that's not a part of my life anymore.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah. I would say the same thing. I didn't really have any regrets, but the positive thing that came out is I've really started going through my comic books and other things that I thought were really important to me, and I'm getting rid of, for example, comics. I have some that are worth a fair amount of money, but I never read them and I don't even like them, and so I've just started getting rid of them, and oddly those comics are worth a lot more than the books, even the ones that I don't like.
Right.
So I'm just going to keep getting rid of them and shrinking my collection. So like I mentioned earlier with the books, you can really tell a lot about me now, just from looking at my books. I think you can, I'm going to try to do the same thing with the comic collection. So I'm not just spending money just to blow on this bloated collection I don't care about. I'm just making something that I like, that tells stories I care about or that resonate with me for some reason. So that's what I kind of what I got out. No regrets, but maybe a refined idea of what I'm doing in the first place.
Yeah, and I think to jump, you know, even from that, it was, made me talking about, like, okay, getting rid of the stuff that I already had. Even as I start thinking about, like, what I'm buying now, I think going through this made me realize, like, man, there's a lot of stuff that either I purchase or that I kind of, like, mindlessly consume without really thinking about it. This made me think about it. You know, am I going to buy a comic that I no longer even really enjoy anymore just so that I can have a big collection again? No, I'm going to pare that out, and I'm going to make sure that the stuff that I'm purchasing is stuff that I actually care about and enjoy, or something that I can at least enjoy and then pass on. I think that's one of the things that I found out of it as well, is that, like, if there's something that I still have that maybe I enjoyed at one point but don't care about as much anymore, it's not going to kill me to pass that along to somebody else that I think might enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before it was kind of, I'm going to retain that. I'm going to keep it. I might loan it out to you once or twice, or, you know, one or two people, but I wanted to keep everything in mint condition. It's like, no, you know, I'm done with that now. I'm going to pass it along. So I think that's going to help me even going into the future. And
yeah. Going forward, I think one thing I'm going to do is just listen to my wife more. Cause I posted that picture of those wine bottles with lights in them that we bought 6 years ago. And I have not plugged in a single time in our entire house until I was making the case on why we should keep them.
Right.
I don't want to give the impression that my wife is somebody that's always telling me to get rid of stuff, because she's not, but she will gently point out to me whether or not things maybe are the best for me or not.
Yeah, she has a good eye for it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one time I tried to decorate a room, y'all, and it was an electric disaster, man. It looked like you gave a 7-year-old spray paint and just sent him in and said, you've got 4 minutes, do your worst.
It was beautiful while it lasted, though.
It was beautiful
in its horror.
It was a spectacle, that's for sure.
And absolutely.
Sam redecorated, because she knows me probably better than I, she's got windows into me that I don't. And so she was able to redecorate that room and make it really cool. With Nate's help, by the way, because he helped hang my guitars up. Yeah, I think I'm maybe going to listen to her more. And I'm also, like you're saying, if it's not on my rating scale, if it's not probably a 5 for a Blu-ray, or if it's not a 4 or 5 for a book, maybe something that I could see myself lending out or referring to, or I want to mark up for my own uses, then I probably just won't buy it. I'll just get it at the library or borrow it or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was really good. Any advice for people who might be wanting to take a similar step?
I mean, just the biggest stuff that I could think of was, you know, just consciously evaluate the stuff that you care about in the first place. I think that's what this forced me to do more than anything else. It's like, why do I care about this? And the vast majority of it is like, I didn't, at least not more than just the idea of it. So if you're taking that into any time you're purchasing a new book or a DVD or a video game or whatever it happens to be, if you're actually putting that effort forth, I don't think you'll get into the mess where you have a bunch of stuff you've got to get rid of in the first place. But going through even stuff that you already have, look at it and it's like, when is the last time I even thought to use this?
Yeah, that's a good rule.
And, you know, if it's been more than, I don't know, you know, like a week, depending on what it is, you should probably figure out some way to get rid of it. You know, especially if it's been a decade or 2.5.
Yeah, some of my books were like caked in dust. I almost had to have a mask just to
pull them out of the
shelves.
Man.
Yeah.
Come out of there like Breaking Bad. So.
Yeah, man. I'm the one who knocks at half price books.
Yes!
Oh,
my
goodness. I'm sorry. It's my show. It's free.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
There we go.
I would say the same thing. That's a good rule. If you haven't used it, or if you don't care about it, just, I guess, get rid of it. But I do want to say that I don't think there's nothing inherently wrong with material things. I mean,
no, absolutely not.
If you have your grandmother's wedding ring, don't just go hawk it for $40 because you don't wear it. I mean,
right.
Or, you know, family heirlooms can tell a story about your family, and they can help have unity among generations and things like that. Just because it's an object doesn't mean it's bad.
No, yeah, absolutely.
All right.
That's fair enough.
I just want to add that in there, because sometimes I don't think you have to be an ascetic. You can just be mindful.
No, yeah. And I think that was something that the Minimalist Challenge was interesting, too. It was like, yeah, it's not that things themselves are bad. It's that we allow ourselves to be so consumed by things that don't matter to us at all that the thing itself has become more important than why we were keeping it.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really the thing to see. Obviously, God made a physical world that we exist in. You know, mountains are good. Drinking and, eating was intended from the very beginning, as they could eat of any tree except for, the good and evil and all of that.
Yep.
And so, yeah, physical things aren't bad. It's just, why are we going after them in the first place? Why are we hoarding onto the things? You know, you didn't have to hoard food at the beginning. You just ate whatever was on the ground.
Yeah. Kinda. Yeah. Just so, that's the tricky thing, because, I mean, we have the rule if you're not using it, but really it almost comes down to just your heart, and only you can know that. So sorry if you're looking for a hard and fast rule. There's not one.
There's not.
Speaking of hard and fast rules, I want to talk about a couple things that do rule.
Yeah.
And those are the projects we're working on.
Absolutely.
The book I mentioned last time, it's compiled. I think it's pretty much done. It's in editing right now. I've got a couple people looking at it. Hopefully Nate's going to take a look at it too.
Absolutely.
And so I'm getting feedback on it, and I'm going through the process of generating the cover and the title. I'm having to write a biography about myself in the third person to go on the back of the book, which is just really a weird process.
Right.
Formatting a book is really hard and tedious. So I can see why people would want to do things with a big time publisher. But we're our own publisher. We're Globe and Crown. So I'm figuring this all out now. And then the more we do it, the more baller projects we're going
to
have.
Yeah. Not only will we be able to make more stuff for ourselves, but hopefully we can help others to be able to do the same thing. Hopefully we learn a lot from this or have a good time or something. I don't know.
All of the above, man. It's kind of like I used to make music with analog 4-tracks and stuff like that. And it's kind of the same thing. I'm trying to figure all this out now. And then when we help other people, I'll be able to pass that knowledge along.
Yeah.
Or help them with, publish those products under us. But we're working on a comic book that I hope will be out at the end of this year or early next year. At a fun meeting with the artist, who I won't name yet because I didn't ask him if that was okay. But we were working on sketches and we started preliminary storyboards. And so this project is going forward, and that's really fun, and I'm looking forward to, I don't want to say too much about it right now, but I guess I can say it's a Western kind of noir comic.
Yeah.
So it's just an amalgam of things that I like. So that's coming out.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that, because that feels like the real first project that Joey and I have gotten to work together on, in particular, from really the inception to, as it's getting made by the artist. So I got to see some of this guy's sketches as well this week. Not for our specific book, but for stuff that he'd worked on in the past.
What he's capable of.
Really got me excited about it. And I'm really looking forward to you guys getting to see that, hopefully by the end of this year.
Yeah.
My own projects have been a little bit more sidelined here lately. Maybe part of that was because of my panic attack with getting rid of stuff. But definitely some things that I'm going to continue working on. And one of the things that Joey and I've talked about a number of times that I want to start working on, and have a report before the time that we, do our next podcast, so fortnightly. My woodworking stuff has been on hold, just due to time. The sideline project that I had, where I was doing some, role-playing stuff, for the players that I have on my current game to actually have like a gift to give them at the end of, this year, is still moving along, but that's not something I can really publish. I want to write a role-playing game essay thing where we can actually talk about what it looks like to role-play in the first place. What does it look like to be a good GM or DM?
I'm really looking forward to that. I think it's going to be really helpful and insightful for a lot of people.
I've learned a lot over the past two and a half years. And I think there's a lot of people who are still new to the hobby, and I feel like a lot of the stuff that's written is either hard to find or it's written from such an insider's perspective that it's too hard to like grasp.
I'm a lawyer, and this stuff is so technical, I have a hard time understanding it.
It can be incredibly technical. But I've had a really good time here even lately. In fact, just last night, getting to play as a player for one of the very few times that I've actually gotten to do that. So I feel like it's even going to bring more to what I can write in the essay and what I can bring about, and hopefully introduce some new people to a hobby that I think is really cool.
Yeah, maybe, just maybe, you listeners could be playing an RPG with Nate and I.
You could.
Actually, it would be Nate and me.
Yeah, whichever one.
I should know that as an editor. Yeah. So I do know that. I just proved it. Nailed it. Okay, well, I think that's pretty much all we have time for today. So next week, we're going to do our first Up for Debate. Lawyer versus car salesman.
Yep.
I mean, the next upcoming fortnight.
Yep.
Is that all we have for today?
I think that's all we've got for today. So yeah, like Joey said, next week we're going to have the up for debate. We've got a reader question or a listener question that I think that we can answer hopefully
from
next week.
The great Game Master Tom.
Yeah, from the great Game Master Tom, who's finally given me a chance to play as a player for the first time in like my 2.5 years of playing role-playing games. And hopefully some other neat, fun surprises as well. Some updates from projects and things like that. But for now, I think that's all we've got for you. So,
all right. I'm Joey.
And I'm Nathan.
Cheers.